Anger is just is. It's an emotion. Emotions, we're 98% emotional and 2% rational. If we say that emotion, if we even say that some emotions are bad and some emotions are good, then we're just denying who we are as human beings. All anger is, in its essence, is it's an indication of a boundary violation.
Welcome to Your Intended Message, the perfect place for leaders and promising professionals who want to convey the intended message for greater success. Every week, we interview experts who address the challenges and best practices to deliver your message effectively. That might be one-to-one, one-to-few, or one-to-many. And perhaps the most important conversation, one-to-self. I'm your host, George Torok. My guest today is Doug Knoll. Here's three facts that I think you should know about Doug. One, he's a lawyer turned peacemaker. In addition to his law degree, he has a master's degree in peacemaking and conflict studies. In 2000, he left a successful law practice as a civil trial lawyer to help people resolve conflicts without litigation or conflict. Gee, we need more lawyers to do that. And the second point, Doug was born nearly blind, partially deaf, and with two club feet. His disabilities were challenging to overcome, which he did. He's a second-degree black belt and a Tai Chi master, a certified ski instructor, an airplane and helicopter pilot, a whitewater river rafter, and a jazz violinist. Damn, he makes me jealous. And three, Doug teaches people how to de-escalate angry people. I bet you know some of them. In 90 seconds or less, his fourth book, an Amazon bestseller, is called De-Escalate, How to Calm an Angry Person in 90 Seconds or Less. Doug has online video courses and provides workshops and coaching to individuals and organizations desiring to increase the emotional competency. Doug Knoll, welcome to Your Intended Message.
Thanks, George. It's great to be here. That's quite the introduction.
Well, you're quite the guest. It's certainly impressive, and I believe that you're going to provide some useful ideas and insights for us today. Doug, let's start with anger. That seems like a good place to start. Tell us,
Lily,
how do we stop? How do we de-escalate these angry people?
Well, it's very interesting. There are at least 12 different kinds of anger, and we don't have time to go into all the different kinds of anger there are, but there are at least 12 different kinds of anger. And at its root, of course, anger is an emotion, and there are many levels and intensities of anger. So you can be frustrated, which is an anger emotion. You can be annoyed. You can be enraged. You can be irritated. You can have hatred. So many, many different levels. The key to all of these emotions are that when we get triggered into an angry emotion, the emotional centers of our brain take over and they shut down the thinking part of our brain. And we've all had this experience and we've seen it. You get angry and you can't think. What some really interesting brain scanning studies show is that when the listener labels the anger to the angry person, the speaker, the anger goes away in about 90 seconds. And all I would say is something like this. Hey, George, you are really pissed off. You're angry. You're frustrated. You feel completely disrespected and ignored. You don't feel appreciated. You feel a little bit of anxiety and worry about all of this. And you're sad because you feel betrayed. And the whole thing is just really frustrating to you. If you were really angry, by me saying those words in that way to you, your brain would literally calm itself down. What's effectively happening is that because your prefrontal cortex is offline when you're angry, when I tell you what you're feeling, it allows your prefrontal cortex to grab a hold and figure things out and all of a sudden calm itself down. And it's how every human brain is hardwired, and it happens in less than 90 seconds. It's amazing how it works.
Doug, if
if we did nothing else in this conversation today, that phrase that you just did, you just delivered there, is enough to provide tremendous value. Because what I'm noticing is, one, when you said that, you were not responding anger to anger, which is the typical response. Well, you're angry, I'll be even angrier. Yes, I can be a bigger jerk than you, no problem. Right. That's the typical response. And then we wonder why he was so unproductive, and we both go away feeling frustrated and unsatisfied. But when you said that, and even though I mimicked anger before, I wasn't angry, but I could imagine if you were saying that to me and I was angry, it's like, oh, you get me. You understand me.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And here's what's happening. Angry people need to be listened to. They're angry because they're not being heard at a deep emotional level. And when you can fulfill that need by validating their emotional experience, what I call listening another person into existence, the anger goes away instantly. And it happens every single time without failure. And I have had 12 years of field experience teaching murderers in maximum security prisons how to become peacemakers and mediators to stop prison violence. And I've taught over 20,000 inmates these skills. And every single one of them has had success with it. And in many of the, we started in 2010, my colleague Laurel Coffer and I started in 2010 in the largest, most violent women's prison in the world, Valley State Prison for Women in Chowchilla, California. 2 years into the program, we trained 800 women out of a population of 3,600. We got an unsolicited letter from the warden saying the prison had quieted down because of prison of peace. It works.
And it works. So you're in a women's prison, violent women, whether it's men or women doesn't matter. But these are violent people who are probably angry about a lot of things.
Very much so.
And might even be justified with, right?
Very much so. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The horrible stories they've lived through, I mean, unbelievable. There's a reason why they're in prison. But murderers are not born, they're bred. And every single violent person I've worked with in prison has a horrible story behind him or her.
And in order to get them, when you're working with them, Doug, in order to get them to listen to you, because I imagine they're sitting there going, oh, look, this guy, he doesn't know anything about me.
Right, exactly. And especially in the women's prison, I'm a big man, white, lawyer, Anglo-Saxon, Protestant. I am the evil incarnate. Everything bad thing that has ever happened to them looked like me. Yeah, it was a humbling experience for me. And it took a lot of learning on all our sides before we started having trust. But what I did was I listened them into existence. I did exactly what I did when I was demonstrating how you listen to somebody. And in 5 weeks, this first group of 15 women, all very black thorns, turned into beautiful mountain roses. It was like overnight, they blossomed. As they came in, they regained their humanity, regained their emotions. And where before they were just exactly the way you described, very surly, you know, skeptical, angry, in week five, they were laughing and happy to see us and proud of the work they were doing and proud of what they had been able to do so far with the skills that we were teaching them. It was a complete turnaround. We were quite surprised, but then we saw the same process in every single cohort we've taught, in every prison we've taught, and we've been physically taught in over 25 different prisons, and we have colleagues all over the world doing this. It seems to be right around week five or six that the transformation occurs.
Now, I can't think of better place to find angry people or to help angry people deal with the anger.
Well, you're right. And you know, I love the title of the show, Your Intended Meaning, because this has given me great meaning in life, to be able to walk into the darkest places on the planet and teach what I believe to be a foundational skill of life and watch dramatic change is probably the most meaningful thing I've ever done in my life. And will probably be one of my great legacies. And it, George, I'm telling you, it's an amazing experience to watch. And it happens every single time. At first, we thought it was a fluke. This can't be happening. So we were in the women's prison for 3 years, and then it repurposed to a men's prison. And we came back and started with men. We didn't know what we were going to get with the men. we saw exactly the same thing. And it doesn't, I worked in many, many different prison environments, and from the darkest prisons you can imagine, and get the same results every single time. I mean, I was teaching in Corcoran State Prison here in California. It's one of the high security prisons, Pelican Bay and Corcoran. And I was working, teaching 100 feet from Charles Manson's cell, teaching a group of guys who were coming out of gangs. They were gangbangers. And they were in cages and shackles in a half circle around me. That was my teaching environment. Not quite the same as when I teach at Pepperdine at the law school. But we got the same results with them that we get with everybody else, and some amazing stories.
Do you teach that anger is bad?
No, anger is just is. It's an emotion. Emotions, we're 98% emotional and 2% rational. If we say that emotion, if we even say that some emotions are bad and some emotions are good, then we're just denying who we are as human beings. All anger is, in its essence, is it's an indication of a boundary violation. Don't tread on me. And there are various kinds of anger, but almost always underneath anger is somebody feels violated. Maybe justifiably, maybe unjustifiably, but it doesn't matter whether it's justified or not. It's still a real emotion, and it has to be validated in order for it to be minimized and extinguished.
And if it works with prisoners, can we use it in the workplace?
Absolutely. You can, I've taught many, many people outside of prison how to do this, and there are just so many applications of this. So when I talk about leadership, I talk about the four dimensions of leadership. You lead up, you lead down, you lead sideways, and you lead inside yourself. You can use these skills in any of those four dimensions. So for example, if you're leading up and you have a boss or a superior who is really angry, before you do anything else, de-escalate them, calm them down. Then you can problem solve. If you've got peers that are really angry for whatever reason, de-escalate them, then problem solve. If you've got subordinates, people that report to you who are really angry and they're shut down or they're passive aggressive or they're quiet quitting, you know, and they're not productive, de-escalate them, listen them into existence, and then you can problem solve. And what I teach leaders is that when you begin to listen in this way, whether you're dealing with angry people or not, just listening to the emotions of your people, you build instant trust and loyalty, and these people will follow you anywhere, and they will do whatever you want them to do because you have created emotional safety when you listen them into existence by reflecting back their emotions. And of course, inside, this is the thing that's really cool, George, is inside, if I get angry, how do I deal with my own anger? I just label it. Oh, I'm really angry right now. I'm angry and frustrated. It goes away, just like that. It's amazing.
Now, Doug, I've noticed that sometimes I get angry, and sometimes later, when I reflect on it, I actually notice that it was a trigger. That person triggered me. It was a phrase. It was a word. It was a thinking style that upsets me. Violates my way of how I see the universe.
There you go.
And so what conversation do I have with myself to avoid falling into that trap?
Okay. So the way I teach this is that you're absolutely right. A lot of anger can be, it's a triggering anger. And basically there's something, either a memory or something in the environment that triggered old childhood programming completely unconsciously. And once it happens, you just start like a piano player roll. You just roll through the schema and you have no control over it. So the trick is to find out what that trigger is. And what I ask people to do is to think about the last time they got angry and write down, and literally with a piece of paper and a pen, don't type it out. No technology here. Write it out, because this is how you change things. You're going to write out, first of all, where were you? Specifically, where were you? What time of day was it? What kind of people were present? What were you wearing? When was your last meal? How tired were you? Did you get a good night's sleep that day? Now think about everything that you could see, hear, smell, taste, and touch. What were all the sensory data that you were getting at the time that you got triggered, and write it all down. You want to be as absolutely as detailed as you can, because somewhere in there is where the trigger is. And you want, that's why you want to capture all of that data. And then you, so the next time that you're in that kind of environment, you'll say, wait a minute, I'm in a place where I might get triggered. So I'll give you an example. I used to get triggered by people cutting me off in a parking lot. You know, it's Christmas Eve. I got to go into the store and get something. It's pouring down rain. I've been waiting for 20 minutes. The guy's pulling out with his car. Just as he's pulling out, some guy in a big old dually pickup truck rips in and takes my spot. Aggravating, to say the least. So what did I do? I said, all right, when I'm under stress and it's getting, and I'm tired and it's the end of the day and I haven't eaten in a while and I have other more important things to do that rather than being sitting in a parking lot and I'm feeling frustration and somebody does something that looks to me like it's rude, I'm going to get angry. So you see how I started isolating all the different stuff. Then what I do is I say, all right, when I'm in this situation, in this time and place with this kind of feelings, I am likely to get angry. What are my choices? What can I choose to do? And so what I learned to do in that situation was I can choose to feel compassion for a person who is so rude and so emotionally unaware that they don't realize how they're hurting other people. And all I can choose to have compassion for them, because they must live really miserable lives to have to do that sort of thing to people, to cut lines and be. And all of a sudden now I have a new choice. So the next time I'm in that situation, maybe I get angry, but now I'm aware, wait, I'm just got triggered. Look, oh yeah, but look where I am. Of course I'm going to get triggered. And maybe I get angry, but at least now I'm aware, oh, I just got triggered. Third time I get triggered, I start to feel the anger come. I say, well, what choice do I want to make right now? I want to be compassionate. This person's a real jerk. They must be living a really miserable life to feel like they need to do this sort of thing. And I just feel compassion because I bet his life is just absolutely horrible. And I'm glad I'm not him. So I'm willing to wait and sit here for a few more minutes. You do that with every single trigger you have. Most people only have 10 or 12 triggers. And when you start working through this process over a period of, you know, a couple of weeks, all of a sudden you start getting a handle on them and you become more emotionally self-aware. And all of a sudden the triggers start to go away and you reprogram yourself.
And that phrase appealed to me. I'm glad I'm not that jerk.
I am too.
which can de-escalate me and give me a little bit of satisfaction is labeling him in more than one way.
Well, you're changing your perspective of the situation. I mean, think about it. Think about people who cut in line or cut in and take your parking lot. And they see you waiting there and they say, I don't care, I'm going to beat this guy up. Think about what a miserable life that must be to live like that, that you have to be so competitive and so mean-spirited and so rude and so disregard other people's feelings that all you can do is think about yourself. How does that person have a relationship with anybody? You know, sad. Feel sad for this person. Compassion. Huh? Horrible life.
And what I'm noticing there, Doug, is that you're tapping your emotion, a different emotion.
Reframing. Mm-hmm. So when I feel the trigger come up, now I'm going to reframe it. Instead of allowing my anger to come up because there's a boundary violation, I'm going to reframe it because I program myself to reframe it as what a miserable life this person must be having, because to knowingly cut me off and take a parking spot that this person knows I've been waiting for patiently and violating our rules in Western society that we're turn takers, right? We stand in line, we're orderly, and we don't butt in front. That's just a basic rule of our society. And when you butt in front, you know, you're a jerk. So, but I don't have to be a jerk about it. This is not the end of the world for me. I can feel compassion and be patient.
And Doug, I'm guessing that people, because it's emotion, people can't make that logical thinking work in the moment. They need to do it outside of the event.
That's exactly correct, George. You have to do the trigger work when you're calm. to prepare yourself for when you're in the turmoil. Because once you get escalated, your prefrontal cortex is overwhelmed and you can no longer think clearly and you can't remember anything. And that's why all these people that talk about all this stuff you should do to calm down, like take deep breaths or go for a walk, it's all bullshit. Seriously. None of it works. It works if you've got 30 minutes. You can calm yourself down by taking deep breaths and going out for a walk if you've got 30 minutes. But most of the time, we don't have 30 minutes and we can't exit. We can't go for a walk and we can't take deep breaths. So we have to learn other strategies, such as affect labeling, learning how to listen to and reflect our own emotions and the emotions of others, because that does work.
And what I notice, Doug, I ride a motorcycle, so I get lots of reasons to be angry at people who...
You're a braver man than I.
who I label as they're trying to kill me. And I remember one incident where... However, you can't ride a motorcycle and be angry.
No. You kill yourself.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like you're in a big pickup truck. You can be angry in that.
Exactly.
On a motorcycle, you can't. So I've trained myself to, even though I might scream something in my helmet, it's gone.
Right.
And now, can anger, is that another way of dealing with anger? You know, just an emotional outburst that kind of releases it and you're okay, you're back?
That's an old myth. That's a Freudian myth. Mm. And all the science shows that by the so-called venting, or what Freud called a catharsis, and I'll come back to that in just a second. The current research shows that if you allow somebody to be angry and continue being angry, they're just going to get angrier. So you can't release emotion. That all came from Freud's theory of emotion and neuroses and all this stuff. He borrowed from the law of thermodynamics and physics, because remember, he was practicing at the end of the 19th century in the height of the industrial age and the steam age, and boilers were exploding everywhere. And so he's trying to figure out why do these 10 upper middle class Viennese women, my data set that I'm working with, how can I describe what's going on? And he says, oh, so because they get this emotional buildup that eventually it has to vent somewhere. And if it doesn't vent properly, then it's going to become a psychosis or a neurosis. So he was just using a metaphor, the steam boiler. And he said, okay, so if we release the steam, if we release the emotion, then we prevent the neurosis or the psychosis. Turns out there's not one thing that Freud theorized about that's scientifically established. Nothing. There's no science to support any of Freud's work. He's a genius, but wrong. And he said as much. He said, I probably am wrong, but this is a place to start. And of course, the whole edifice of psychiatry and psychotherapy has been built on a foundation of non-science.
And the message I'm hearing there is, so you don't need to rant.
You don't.
No.
Ranting is bad. Ranting is bad. The sooner you can get calmed down, the better off you are.
And so I can see situations in a workplace. Now, probably the most common place that it's easy to get angry is when angry people are talking to you. Look, you're in the customer service department and angry customers.
Yeah. So that's when you really want to know how to listen to emotions, because you can all you can. What's the beauty about this idea is that when you reflect back an angry person's emotions, it's like there's a productive bubble that flows around you and you don't get angry at all. You don't get triggered at all. As long as you're focusing on their emotions and reflecting back their emotions, you will not get triggered. So you can stay perfectly calm. And after you've done this a few times, you begin to see the patterns. And you see the anger pattern. They're all the same. Human beings have a very limited repertoire of emotional behavior. Very limited. To the untrained eye, it looks like chaos. To the trained eye, it's like playing a record over and over again. We see the same things over and over again. And once you get the eye for that and the training for it, then it becomes a no-brainer how to handle it. And you don't worry about it. It's no longer upsetting. The other thing I teach is, I said earlier, we're 98% emotional and only 2% rational. So when you make that mind shift and you start seeing people as emotional beings, they're no longer irrational or crazy. They're just emotional. And you know how to deal with that. So it's not a big deal. Not worth getting upset about. And you can calm that angry customer down in less than 90 seconds. And then you can go about problem solving. What's it going to take to solve the problem? It's that simple.
probably, and I'm guessing in that kind of situation, probably the wrong phrases to say are things like, you're being irrational.
Right. That's called emotional invalidation. You're making a mountain out of a molehill. Don't be such a drama queen. You know, why are you making such a big deal? But I do listen to you, right? I've got a list. I've got a 5-page single space list of emotionally invalidating statements. And all they do is make an angry person angrier. And we've all been emotionally invalidated, and we know that it feels crappy. We know it makes us angrier. We feel disrespected. We don't feel heard. We feel ignored. And yet, why do we emotionally invalidate other people? And the reason is that unconsciously, we're trying to soothe our own anxiety around another person's upset. So if my brain is saying, George, if I can tell you not to be emotional, not to be angry, not to make a mountain out of a molehill, you'll stop feeling angry, which will make me feel better. I won't feel anxious anymore. So emotional invalidation is really a very selfish strategy that doesn't work. It just makes things worse.
So what we're doing when we say those phrases that invalidate the person, we're doing it for ourselves to make us feel better.
We're trying to make ourselves feel better. If I can diminish your emotions, if I can judge you, criticize you, tell you not to feel the way you feel, and you stop feeling that way, then I'll stop feeling anxious. But of course, that's a perversion, because if I diminish your feelings, you're only going to get angrier. It's only going to get worse. It's particularly difficult with children. Parents emotionally invalidate their children all the time. And I talk about this as the most insidious, pervasive form of emotional abuse that exists. Because when you emotionally invalidate your child, you're literally destroying brain cells. And what parents should be considering instead is validating their children's emotions to allow their brains to develop in a healthy way. Most people stop emotionally maturing at 6 years old, and they never get past 6 years old in their emotional maturity. They grow up as adults, and we have nice facades and all this stuff. But we've all seen the 40-year-old turn into the 6-year-old instantly, right? We get angry, and we revert right back to where our emotional maturity stopped, 6 years old. Why six? Because at six-year-olds are starting to have independence and agency. And that's when mom and dad all of a sudden start seeing this little creature as distinct, not always quite so soft and cuddly. And the child, for the first time, does not feel, probably not for the first time, but becomes aware of the fact that I'm not in an emotionally safe place. So when parents emotionally invalidate or don't coach a child emotionally, which many parents don't do, the child feels unsafe, shuts down, represses emotions, and now is beginning a lifelong pattern of emotional repression and suppression that leads to bad results later in life.
I've seen this scene in the grocery store where the parent is got their child with them, and maybe they're sitting in the cart or maybe they're walking beside them, and the kid throws a tantrum. Of course, the parent is doing everything to shut the kid up.
Right. And it doesn't work.
What should they be doing?
Susie, you're really angry. You're frustrated. You want the candy and you can't have it. And you're tired and you're bored. And you want to go home. And the whole thing just makes you really, really angry and not happy. Yeah. It's over with. Done. How long did it take? 5 seconds, 10 seconds?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I have parents I've trained these techniques to, and grandparents, and they report to me that when they start listening to their children's emotions and validating them, tantrums are gone in 4 months, never to reappear again, starting at 2 years old.
Mm. There's a neighbor I'd like to connect you with.
This is foundational. And that's why I really enjoy being here and having this conversation, because this is all new knowledge. The first brain scanning study on this didn't come out until 2007. So it's all new. I'm the only one really that's talking about it in any big way. I discovered it because of my work as a peacemaker, needing a way to calm down angry people. And despite all the education I have and all the experience I have, I didn't have any good tools for calming people down. Active listening didn't work. Nonviolent communication didn't work. None of that stuff worked. So I had to figure it out, and I did figure it out. And then the brain science supports why this works the way that it does. And in my workshops, you know, sometimes people will give me a little kickback and I'll say, well, where's your science? I'll show you my science if you show me your science. Everything I do is based on neuroscience. how our brains actually function, not on pop psychology or old Freudian myths or stuff like that. And that's why it's so effective.
In the workplace, when we're in team meetings or teams working together, it's easy to get angry because of miscommunication or someone's missed a deadline or we just don't like your attitude.
Right.
And what does a team leader do to diminish the anger amongst the team?
All right. One of the techniques that I teach leaders is how to label the emotions of the group, because the group will have an emotion or emotions. They'll share an emotion. Okay, you guys are all really frustrated and you're really angry and you feel completely ignored and disrespected and completely unappreciated. And it's really, really affecting all of you. And you're all wondering, none of you feel motivated and you feel completely betrayed by upper management. So notice how I'm labeling the whole group. So that's one technique. Another technique is to, depending upon the circumstance, you can either immediately, if you're having a team meeting and somebody blows off, you can either affect label them right now, right then, or you can take them aside after the meeting and affect label them. Either one works. You just have to have discernment, knowing your people, what's going to be most effective. Personally, I would probably tend to affect label or reflect back emotions in the meeting because I want to model a certain behavior to my people. I want to show them that no matter how angry you get, I'm still holding a safe place for you. And I want to show you that I'm not going to get reactive and that I'm going to respond to you in a way that validates your emotional experience no matter what you feel or what you do, to make you feel safe, to create emotional safety. And the reason I want to do that is because of a Google study. Google did a huge study a couple of years ago trying to understand why the top 0.1% of their teams were super performing teams and everybody else was either good or average. And what they found out after an extensive study is the teams that were outperformed everybody else were psychologically safe places to be. You could be wrong. There's no criticism, very little gossip, no backstabbing. It was an emotionally safe environment to work in. And so I think that's one of the leader's three basic functions is to create that kind of emotional safety. Leaders provide direction, focus, and safety. And safety, psychological and emotional safety is critical. And the way you do that is by validating emotions. And when you do this consistently over a period of even just a couple of weeks, everything shifts because people feel heard. Like you said at the beginning of the show, George, oh, you get me. Oh, you get me. Once you know your leader gets you, you'll follow that leader anywhere.
That's worth repeating. Once you know the leader gets you, you'll follow them anywhere.
That's right.
Valuable advice. Doug, were you once an angry person?
I had my moments of anger. I would say that I was more arrogant than I was angry. My arrogance was covering up all of the problems I had, emotional problems I had with the disabilities you mentioned at the beginning. I grew up with a really challenging childhood and young adulthood. I had a lot of crap to overcome. My parents tried to be as loving as they could, but they didn't know how to deal with me, and no one knew how to deal with me. And so I felt pretty worthless. So I covered it up. I was smart. So I was able to cover it up with arrogance. And so I don't think I've ever been an intrinsically angry person, but I definitely had a huge streak of arrogance for a long time. Took me a while to get over it.
Why do you think some people are consistently angry?
There are some people who have been so traumatized in their life. I mean, they have a perception of deep trauma that anything that even gets close to them is a boundary violation and sets them off. And obviously, you can get to a point where it's no longer, where it becomes a condition that needs to be dealt with with professionals. And there are some people that are that way. And there are other people who have learned to be angry. I remember working with a group of men in prison and asked them about what were the dominant emotions how were emotions dealt with in your family? And one guy said, the only emotion that was in my family was raw anger. And that's the only thing I learned. I didn't learn love. I didn't learn anything. All I learned was anger. So it can be a learned trait too.
Can anger ever be positive?
Sure. I mean, anger is a self-protective mechanism to protect you against danger. And like I said, boundary violation. Now, the boundary violation could be a physical violation, imminent threat of violence, for example. Most of the time for most people, it's not. It's a social violation, in which case anger is probably not appropriate. Although we're going to respond, our brains will respond to the social danger, the social threat, in exactly the same way it will respond to a physical threat. Our brains, only the prefrontal cortex can make the distinction between physical and social. The rest of our brain is going to look at, perceive a threat as a threat, regardless of whether or not you can do bodily harm or not. And people that have been through trauma, like PTSD, are going to be acutely sensitive and be much more prone to getting triggered into anger.
Doug, if people want to find out more about you, your programs, your offerings, where can they find you?
I created a webpage, George, for everybody who's listening to Your Intended Message, the podcast here. And if you're, those of you who are listening or watching, just all you got to do is go to Doug Knoll, DougNoll.co/intended-message. DougNoll.co/intended-message. And on that page, free ebook describing all these techniques that I've been talking about. You can buy my fourth book, Deescalate. You can buy an online video course, the Deescalate video course, where I teach you how to deescalate on online lessons. And then if you want to go deeper, you can take my online courses called Developing Emotional Competency, which takes the de-escalation ideas and goes much deeper. And that's where you can learn how to deal with your triggers and learn how to deal with anger and how to confront anger and all that stuff. DougKnoll.co/intended-meaning.
And you can find that link in the description below. Doug, as we prepare to wrap up, if you could sit down with a business leader, a team leader, and give them one, two, or three pieces of advice to help them manage anger amongst their team, what might be those one, two, or three pieces of advice?
The most important thing I tell those kinds of leaders is learn how to listen your team members into existence. Learn how to validate their emotions. Learn how to make them feel like you really get them at a deep level. When you do that, all of your interpersonal problems go away, or they become so minimal they're very easy to deal with. But if you don't do that, then you have no other foundation to work with, and you're going to have just nothing but problems, especially with more difficult people.
My guest today is Doug Knoll, reminding you to listen people into existence.
If you like what you heard, remember to like, comment, and share this podcast. Come back every week for more practical insights to help you deliver your intended message. I'm your host, George Torok.